The music you have heard is from Valix, but this is still The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Rob Richman is here. He's the creator of that band, Valix, and he's a writer of graphic novels. He is a creator of a card game. He is what we now call a creative, which is an umbrella term for someone who's a musician, who's a writer, who's a maker, who's a seer, a visionary, and who also knows how to use the technical world to make all of this happen. So, Rob, have I described you accurately?
I feel a little too accurately, maybe. No, I'm thrilled to be here, and it's...
I'm a big fan.
Well, thank you. No, it's humbling to be in the Library of Congress and to be talking to you and to be talking about the things that make me happy.
Well, we love people who are creating things that did never exist before. And that is, I told you, Robert Frost said that writing is to always have your childhood inside of you. And so what you've taken, apparently, are childhood dreams and made them externalized. You've created worlds. I want to talk about those. The music we heard, Valix, could you just describe that band?
Sure. So the Valix, to me, is the musical narrative. It's sort of the soundtrack, but it also helps to connect the pieces of the world that I'm writing in the graphic novel. I needed something, for me, as a lifelong musician, I needed something like a handle in the world that I could really hold on to. And as a writer, I felt it was important for me to have something like that that grounded the project. So writing lyrically forces me to use less words and to be very concise and to think very accurately about the words I'm choosing. Whereas being a writer in the graphic novel sense, it tends to allow me to open up and be more exploratory inside the world. So they sort of complement one another. And so the Valix is my inward facing eye, whereas the graphic novel is sort of the outward facing
eye. Wow, that's a wonderful way. And yet the band is very exterior.
Oh yeah.
Because it is really the context for your thinking and your life. Tell me about a little bit about putting that together, and how is the band doing?
The band's doing very well. We've been together about 5 years. We're just now starting to break out of our shell a little bit, reaching out to play more shows, get in front of larger audiences. We recently released our third EP, so this is a constantly evolving process. I prefer... A lot of bands tend to write an album and they'll put an album out and then they'll go away for a year or two to write more material. I'm much more generative. I like having, as soon as I get good ideas, let's put them down and get them out and then move on to the next thing.
Oh, man. What were you like in the fifth grade? I cannot imagine. I bet you wouldn't stay in your seat, right?
I was a bit of a bookworm. Definitely have been in the geek culture since I was very young.
I know. And that is what interests me so much, because all art started as a subculture.
Sure.
Truly. And what you have done is really, I see elements of so many things, from your music to your card game that you've invented to your graphic novels, that are all part of another world.
Mm-hmm.
So what is this other world called?
Well, the world is called Athla in the comic.
What is Ocean?
Oh, the Cloud Ocean.
What is Cloud Ocean?
So the Cloud Ocean is the name that the people of that planet have given to the ecological collapse that they are now living in. So it's a post-apocalypse, if you will, right?
So harking back, we started with your music. Mm-hmm. Let's just hear the lyrics written
Sure. As
you invented them, and then we'll just talk about that a bit.
Sure.
So let's hear one of the band's lyrics.
Okay, this was the first song that we listened to on the way in. This is called Empty. Empty is a shark in shallow water. Empty is my skin when my wits go cold as ice. And in that moment when the emptiness escapes me, lost in silence of the calm before the fall, black flags fly, no disguise. Empty is a hole I fill with murder. Empty is a box I fill with fear of dying alone. No surprise. hot lead finds home. Close my eyes and start my prayer, but angels cannot find me here, no. Fill my lungs and try to scream, so demons can't hold on to me, no. This is not my time, not my day to die.
That is the voice of Rob Richman. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and we're at the Library of Congress, and we're listening to lyrics that came with the music intro to the show. There is a beauty in ruins, because from ruins come resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
But in your world, why is it dystopian? Why do you see everything that you write as rising from the ashes? Do you see the ashes?
Well, as we discussed, I'm a Generation Xer. I feel like the worldview that I've been sort of privy to for the majority of my life has been this fear of decline and a fear of a fall of Western civilization. Something that a class I took back at university, I was at University of Virginia, where we talked about the fall of Western civilization and the direction that the world is headed, and that we're really on a precipice of falling into cultural ruin. And that was something that was discussed in the anthropology department back in the early 2000s. And that made a pretty solid impression on me. I don't necessarily agree with that, but it's something that I wrestle with, something that I actively, as an artist, try and fight against.
But many people that are post-millennials are occupying this state of mind. You're saying it's a cultural imprint, a stain on the brain in a way, but from it comes vast creativity.
I think
so. That's what interests me the most. You talk about, there's talk of murder, there's talk of darkness, there's talk of death, but it is all transformative, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would like to read something from the back of this graphic novel. Imagine making graphic novels as well as having a band, as well as making, I have to say, do you ever sleep?
No.
Okay, that's, I wouldn't recommend it. It wastes so much time. But here we're looking at two graphic novels, and one is Chapter One, The Archive, and I'll read the back.
Sure.
800 years after a global ecological disaster, life on planet Atla has almost returned to normal. A young archivist, Ash Azadi, grows tired of teaching the children of the enclave every day. Secretly, she longs for the chance to follow in the footsteps of her estranged Aronaut father, even if that means she may share his fate, lost forever somewhere out on the perilous cloud ocean. So, did you imagine the story in your mind first? Did you start writing it like a storyboard? How do you write a graphic novel?
Well, I had the core of it for a long time. I'm a longtime science fiction reader as well.
But this is beyond science fiction, isn't it?
Oh, fantasy science fiction,
okay.
Sure. So I'd sort of put it in the camp of maybe like a Star Wars type fantasy sci-fi. But the story has been sort of incubating with me for decades. Something that I wanted to be mature enough to tell, a story that I knew that I had to grow up into. Being a musician and being a writer, I always struggle with when is the right time, like when is this done? Like when is this song ready to be released? When is this next album ready to go out? And as a writer, I knew that I wanted to have the vocabulary and have the maturity to handle the subject matter that I wanted to talk about. And it just happened to coincide with the formation of this band. The card game gave me a way to explore the concept of the world a little differently than I'd ever done before, because I'm primarily a musician and a writer. So the interdisciplinary sort of like interconnectedness between those three mediums has really allowed me a lot of creative space.
But to start a graphic novel, you write a story.
Mm-hmm.
And then does the artist chop it up into blocks?
So actually, I write it as a script, So it doesn't, in my heart, it's like a liquid narrative. Like, oh, I can jump really? In anywhere, right?
And who then divides it up?
That's all me, actually.
So you divide it up after you've written the narrative, mm-hmm. and then your artist responds to the lines you've written?
You got it.
Yeah. And where is your artist?
Jacob Wojcinski is my primary collaborator. He's the lead artist, and he lives in Warsaw, Poland.
How did you find him?
We met online, actually.
The magical world
That's
of
right.
online.
Yeah.
If there were electronics, would you be you?
Hmm.
Because the whole world that you occupy is really born of hardware, isn't it?
Well, in this world in particular, they're integrated with it. Our mm-hmm. main character has a mechanical arm that she uses to directly interface with the computer, which is like the brain of the world, right? It's the heart of all knowledge. We're ironically, here we are in the Library of Congress, sort of.
Yeah, but you know
repository.
What? You really are emblematic of a generation which interests me very much. So when you were raised on Star Trek and Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't even seen either of them, but I don't look so shocked.
Oh.
But I saw you interviewed once, and someone said to you, "Which do you choose?" And you said, "Oh, don't make me choose between those two." Tell me a little bit about what you were raised on.
So
what images?
Yeah, I think synthesis, right? So this is a science fiction and fantasy world. Obviously, Star Wars.
Yours is.
Yes, yeah. The cloud ocean is a fantasy science fiction sort of fusion. I was raised on everything from Tolkien to Bradbury to Heinlein and Orson Scott Card. All these sort of fantasy and science fiction authors. And I was told a number of years ago when I began writing, write what you know, right? Like write what's in you. Don't try and create something that isn't a part of who you are. And I feel like as I've gotten older, I feel like all of those flavors have slowly simmered and become sort of part of one voice that I feel now so much more confident.
And you had
sharing.
To do this, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
You couldn't be an accountant?
No.
A doctor? A lawyer?
No.
Why did you have to do this? Create another world. You have created another universe.
Yeah.
Do you feel powerful?
No, I feel like this is almost a cry for help, to be honest.
Well, we are going to answer that cry because I think you're going to have a big audience.
Thank you.
Because I think it's an evolution, isn't it? So let's hear another piece of your music.
Sure.
And what will that be?
Do you want to take a listen to Sky Climbing?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Now that we've heard that, could you please say it to us?
Sure.
Here are the lyrics before they were put to music.
All right. Last night, answers fell to earth like old gods, seeking questions to redeem the old faults. But they're coming for you just like they came for me. They're keeping our world from spinning around. The time will come. Save yourself. Midnight, starlight, the cloud ocean sings the old songs. Always darkest before the break of new dawns. This is the winter of our exile from Eden. This is the last stop on a train to forever gone. Nothing we do will ever get us to even. Nothing we do will right this avalanche of wrong. From where I stand, I see a long road before us. I look behind and I see a trail of the dead.
That makes me very sad, but it's still beautiful. A great writer once said, say it clearly and make it beautiful. Is that your intent, to say it clearly?
Definitely to say it clearly. Mm-hmm. I think as a writer, I've had to learn to be very specific with word choice and try and say exactly what I'm, the emotion that I'm trying to convey is more important necessarily than the words that are being used. But that's
I'm with you.
Yeah, that's the clarity I'm seeking, I think.
The feeling is everything. Mm-hmm. And in your novels, does right overcome wrong?
I live in a world of gray, right? I mean, that's the world we live in. There is often there's paragons of good and evil, but I think the vast majority of us live in a gray reality, somewhere in between. And the world that I'm trying to write is that world. I'm trying to illustrate that as best I can.
But you have good and you do have epitomized characters here.
Yes, but they have their own worlds internally, right? So even good or even evil characters believe that they are the heroes of their own story.
So there's complexity in graphic novels, and
Absolutely.
People don't understand that each of these characters, and some are robots.
Yeah.
And yep,
those are the ones I relate to the most sometimes.
Do you think there's hope for artificial intelligence?
I think there is.
A good hope?
I do. I was raised on, you know, Isaac Asimov and the Foundation trilogy and the idea that as arbiters of our own fate, that we are constantly creating and looking forward. And I think fear, in the same way that Luddites feared the advancement of the Industrial Revolution, I feel like we're sort of, it's just that fear of the unknown that's holding a lot of these things back. I think futurism and looking forward is the, you know, progressivism and thinking like being hopeful for the future is the best way forward. If we live in constant fear of the future, I think we're going to end up in that dystopian future that we're fearing.
I see you plowing through these concepts in your work. I see you carving a path mm-hmm. through degradation into something which is possible. So this is all about possibility, isn't it?
It is.
And you talk about it as if it's all one. Cloud Ocean, your band, Valix, all of your creations. What is the one song it's singing? It's saying one thing. All of it's saying one thing to me.
The main character, Ash Azadi, the name Ash is not chosen randomly. The word Ash in Hindi is translated as hope. And she's the main character. She is the POV character for the reader. Mm-hmm. And I feel like hope is the one thing that helps to drive the future forward.
Certainly, it keeps the artist going.
That's
or
true.
That we wouldn't create.
Right.
There are other characters in here, and the Hindi lore is really predominant in your work.
Yep.
What are some of the other references?
Did
you study this?
I did back in college. I was an anthropology major at University of Virginia.
Oh, and here are the new archives.
That's it. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so why were you so impressed with that frame of thinking?
I was absolutely fascinated coming from I grew up in Stanton, Virginia, small town, Virginia. I wasn't really exposed to a lot of world culture growing up in the mid-80s. In such a small town in, you know, southern United States or mid-Atlantic.
Under the Mason-Dixon line.
Yeah,
anyway.
Right, yeah. And when I went to university, it was the first time I was exposed to real thoughts outside of my little bubble. And I'd always been predisposed to thinking outside of that box. I was always reading other people's work and reading artists from other cultures, but it never really clicked until I started meeting people. And when I started at university, I was an engineer, and I moved from engineering into anthropology by way of a music degree in the middle. So,
and that's all here.
Yeah, it's kind of all in there, yeah.
Oh my, you did it all.
Yeah.
This is it. We have anthropology.
Yep.
We do have music.
Mm-hmm.
And now the card game.
Sure.
Tell us about your card game.
Well, the card game is called The Forever Gone. And The Forever Gone are in the world, they are the exiles. They're the ones who've been pushed out because they're different. They have extraordinary abilities, but not all of them can control those abilities. So they work together to teach each other how to be better.
So there's 52 cards?
50 individual cards.
And each one is a character?
Each one is an ability. So as a player, you take on the role of the character, and these are your abilities. And you're trying through the game to harness those abilities to spar against another person like yourself to make each other better.
How many people play?
In one box, you can play two people one-on-one. We've played up to six people simultaneously. The game kind of changes.
Is it always different with the players?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Every person brings their own style and personality to every character.
It's not like Candyland.
No, it's not like Candyland.
So Rob Richmond is here. He is a phenomenon. He is a visionary. He is a product of our time. And he is bringing together all of the facets of imagination and wish, childhood dreams, fantasies, into a coherent work of art in music and in writing. And it is so interesting to see how your mind works, actually. Starting as an engineer was very lockstep, right?
Oh, absolutely. You're kind of on rails when you started.
And you were good at math.
Yep.
And then you are an audio engineer as well as everything else.
Yep, that's true.
So when did you plug your first plug into a wire and know that you could do magic?
I don't remember a time before music in my life. I do remember being about 8 or 9 years old and being in the adult choir at my parents' church. And I was the youngest person, but I had this big, my voice came in fairly early. So I had this big, like little body with this big voice. And since then, it was always just a matter of going from musical project to project to project. I've never been without a band for more than a few days, probably.
Well, so this band is going to be playing, does it have some options now to perform?
We focus, because of the nature of the project, where we have the card game and the comic book and all those tie-ins that are geek culture and pop culture related, we tend to focus on booking ourselves at conventions. So
makes sense.
Yeah. So we look for large audiences where they already are and go to entertain them there, as opposed to seeking to go to like a bar or a music venue and having to flip that relationship where you have to draw people to you. I'm trying to start this a little bit differently.
Well, you certainly start everything differently. You have a little marketing neuron back there too. And let's hear another piece of music.
Sure.
We're going to hear a little bit more of Valix. But before we do, Rob, how can people plug into your brain? Do they just Google Rob Richmond?
Well,
Valix, Cloud Ocean?
I have different websites for all of those things.
But just give us some.
The best place to go is probably just to go to www.thevalix, and the Valix is spelled V-A-I-L-I-X.com. And that's sort of the hub for...
We can find you.
Yeah.
You can run, but you cannot hide from us now that we've met you, Rob. Okay, let's hear a little bit of this last piece. And it is called what?
Perihelion.
Now that we've heard that, sometimes for me it is difficult to parse out the words when I get involved with the music. So would you please read us these lyrics?
I'd be happy to. This is actually exciting for me because this song was a collaboration. So lyrically, this is both my voice as well as my friend Bryce Fletcher, who was one of my writing partners. And the song is ostensibly about fate, but it's also about relationships and how everything is cyclical. Everything comes back around, right? So perihelion. When I left you, a sphere of seething matter, put several spinning worlds between us two. I never thought your gravity would hold me, but I feel your solar wind blowing right through me. Pull, gravity, stuck, you swallow me. It comes back to perihelion. Tell me what we've done. Perihelion, right back where we started from.
What does perihelion mean?
So the perihelion is the point when an object is orbiting its star that it is the closest relationship, the closest distance between the object orbiting the star and the star itself. So it's the point of most intense heat and relationship between those two objects.
Rob, that stands up very well as poetry, as well as lyrics, though. What is the difference between poetry and lyrics?
When I write lyrically, so I do write poetry in my own time, my own for myself, and particularly modern poetry, I feel like I can just sort of, it's stream for me a very stream of consciousness, trying to find the deepest part of who I am and just kind of put it on paper. Lyrically, I have to convey a message, I feel like, in an incredibly compressed and relatively structured amount of time. Musically, structures in music, repeating structures, things that have to repeat, or not always that rigid, but music in popular culture has, you know, these sort of call and response kind of forms. And when I write lyrically, I have to be conscious of what are these words going to mean the second time they're repeated or the third time that they're repeated.
So I see.
Yeah, small chunks of words evolve as more and more of the song sort of unfolds.
That is the voice of Rob Richmond. This program is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is brought to you by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation and the Sinipet Fund. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.